Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Corn. I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports Gordon Parks and Michael Gannon. Guys, how are you both?
Daniel, very well. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Mick, yourself?
All good. All the better to speak to you, chaps.
Haircut, Michael.
What's that, Parsi?
Free haircut, yeah.
Free haircut. Free holiday haircut. Not and long now.
Mick's only got six good haircuts left in him.
definitely do it single figures.
Don't bow your head, Mick. Keep your head up, chin up.
No.
That's harsh.
A dodgy backline.
I think the best place for us to start, guys, since we did a Celtic podcast.
Brother Gannon.
There's been another derby match, of course, between Celtic and Rangers. I know it's a few days ago now, but I definitely think it's worth starting on. I mean, Celtic, I know they get a wee bit of luck in the end, but Gordon, it's fair enough to say that they were definitely worthy of the win.
Daniel, the consistent theme of all Old Firm games this season is you've got one team who have got so much strength and depth, attacking weapons, class, quality, verve, confidence, a system and structure that they can adapt against a Rangers team that trying to keep their head above water at that level. And I think you saw it again at the weekend. Celtic have got class performers, key individuals that take responsibility, people that step up in the big moments and the big occasions. And Rangers don't. And it's a substandard Rangers team against a terrific Celtic side. And again, time and time again, you're seeing that.
What did you think, Mick, of the game, just generally?
Yeah, I don't quite buy the narrative that Rangers were all that fantastic, deserved something more from the game, I think. I think Celtic deserved the victory. It was a pretty fairly close game. I think you look at all the metrics, you judge a kind of game, chances created, shots and goal, shots and target, corner kick. Celtic were on top, possession, on top of all those metrics. I think Celtic were mostly the dominant team. I think Rangers had a good spell just after they got the disallowed goal and just after the start of the second half, after they scored right before the first half finished. I think they had a decent little spell. Didn't create, I think the one chance that Joe Hart saved, I think for the most part, I think you always felt that Celtic had another gear, and the threat they had going forward, you always felt Celtic were going to cause problems and score goals. I think the outcry about the goal that was ruled out, I think it was a really soft decision. I think any team would feel hard done by. If it had been a defender on the other side pushing, would the team be calling for a penalty kick? Probably, yes, they would. Therefore, it could be a foul. I think it was soft, but I think I can see why the decision was made. What I don't quite buy is that if that goal is scored, that I don't know if that means that Rangers go on to win the game. I still doubt it. I still think Celtic had enough to cause them problems. So Rangers did score an equaliser, and Celtic kind of kicked on again afterwards. But it went to 3-1. I actually thought for a period that Celtic, I think Ange Postecoglou put on and a few other subs, and I thought, and Haksabanovic, I thought he smells blood here. I think he was thinking 4-5. And at that point, it could have been. But Rangers, in fairness, swung it again. They got a goal from a kind of second phase set piece, and it made it interesting towards the end. But I never felt that Celtic, at that point, at 3-2, even 3-each, wouldn't really damage Celtic in terms of league position. I thought they were fairly comfortable. I just think Celtic were not at their best. And yet that below-par performance was still more than enough to see off Rangers, which kind of shows the work being done for Rangers in terms of going to Hampden at the end of this month and for next season. Because I think Celtic can play better and will play better in the future.
I know it's been talked about to death a wee bit now, but just on that Morelos non-goal, Gordon, I mean, like, I could understand why people were annoyed. I thought it was soft, but I don't think it was the outrageous. I mean, Alan McCoy's in commentary saying it was an embarrassment and stuff like that. If you watch it, Morelos does have his two hands at one point on Johnson's back. I do think it was soft, but I don't think it was ridiculous as some people have made out.
Daniel, I spoke to Stephen Conroy, the former referee, this week, and he points out that referees are only, they're carrying out instruction to the letter, and it's a ruling that's the issue. Contact in the box is allowed, but it is a push. So I can see why it was given, but again, it's classic deflection. Let's take the talk away from the defeat. Let's create a victimhood. There's always this Old Firm fallout grievance, and there's always isolating incidents. Was it a free kick? Probably. It probably was. I just think that it's classic deflection. And listening to the remarks from the Rangers management and players after the game, they lost the game. They're trying to take plaudits or some kind of merit from another defeat. Football's about winning and losing games. Celtic and Rangers, you can't... Defeat's nowhere right. And I just think the hyperbole over this incident and the hysteria behind it, and some of it even more so sinisterly so, what a poisonous kind of remarks coming out of that, especially Kevin Clancy, we can talk about that. Yeah. I think it's dangerous, and I just think it's total deflection, and I can see why the decision was given, but it wasn't, as Mick says, pivotal to the greater picture. Mm-hmm. They lost that game 4-5-1. Could have been worse.
Just on the game itself again, Mick, I thought a couple of things jumped out at me. The first thing, I thought Johnston was a real standout. I think he definitely looks like an upgrade on Juranovic. No harm to Juranovic, who's a good player, but he looks like a cut above. I think the price Celtic have paid, that's amazing business.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say a cut above as yet, because Juranovic was a good player. He's like a guy who played in the World Cup, got to the last four. I think maybe brings a wee bit more in terms of going forward, Juranovic. Defensively, yeah, I think Johnston has been a terrific signing, not just because he's a good player and he's defensively very, very strong. I think his personality is integrated into the squad very impressively as well. I think he's a real infectious character. He does get wired in. I mean, fans are going to love him because he does get stuck in. He's not scared to get do the rough stuff as well. He had a few moments at the weekend that were a bit risky. I think he was the one that kind of made a bit of a mess. The build-up to the Morelos chance that Joe Hart saved, I mentioned earlier on. So he had a few nervy moments, but he also had some moments that really got the crowd on their feet, some crunching tackles and really getting wired in. So you can see why he's a real favourite for the supporters. But he had been a great bit of business. Listen, selling Juranovic for $10 million, buying him for $3 million, it's only 24. Tremendous business by the manager. And he's only going to get better. I think he will improve. I think going forward, he'll get better as the weeks go on and the months go on. But defensively, certainly, he's given them a bit of bite, and he's been tremendous.
And the other thing that jumped out at me, Gordon, was, and I know we've spoke about it before in the Celtic podcast, I know that you reckon Rio Hatate is the best player in the country, and he wasn't even playing. That's the thing that jumps out. I mean, people are talking about the game at Hampden and trying to make a game of it and stuff, and I'm sure it will be close, but Celtic were without their best player last weekend.
I still think he is. He's the most impactful. I think he takes more responsibility than Emery. I think he's key to the Celtic style, and certainly the way they press. He's certainly the pivotal figure there. But again, you've got Celtic players full of personality. They bring their personality to the occasion. They go and influence the game as you expect them to do it, and they're stronger. Mick talks about the personality in Johnston, and I think clearly he's got the composure and temperament to go and cope and participate and play his part. There's no hiders at Celtic. I don't think Ange Postecoglou tolerates that. And I think it's clear that these players are desperate to go make an impact, desperate to go and be part of the collective, the performance. And I think that's Celtic's greatest strength, that they can do without. I mean, Callum McGregor was missing for large spells with his injury. They've had Diogo missing. He's a talisman. These are people that really influence games. And they've got so much strength and depth that they can afford to do without.
I thought Hatate was a big miss at the weekend, actually. I think his presence was greatly missed by Celtic in terms of the way they play, especially against Rangers. It didn't help that, listen, poor Aaron Moy, who has been probably one of the stars of the season, an unexpected hero of this Celtic team, he was absolutely howling at the weekend. I mean, fair play, come back from injury, clearly looked rusty. So you can't fault the guy for the way he's been playing this season, but he had a shocker on Saturday. Nothing came off. I mean, it looked as though he was playing the pair of wellies. at times. And it's not like him, because him and Hatate in recent months have been so key to the way Celtic play. They play the ball at your feet into these guys in tight areas. They can control it, drag in opposition players two and three at a time, knock a pass in behind them and take them out of the game. And I think Moy just couldn't seem to get that going. He took the ball in tight a few times and it just bounced off him and he gave it away and he was chasing. And the poor guy, listen, he burst like up and he was trying to work through it for an hour, but it was clearly not going to be his day. And Hatate is a big miss. I thought Mattarelli played really well. I know people seem to think he's off the boil or something. I don't quite see that myself. I thought he was really effective. We saw his movement and his ability for the opening goal. But it's no doubt, I think Hatate's loss was felt at the weekend, and instead of hoping he's fit.
I think it's important to bring up the O'Reilly bit, because he has weirdly been getting a bit of stick from Celtic fans, that's the wrong phrase, but I thought he was really good at the weekend. It was good to see him have a good game in such a big game.
I don't think he's been particularly poor at any point in time, to be honest with you. I mean, I think it's been hard for him. I think he kind of played a deeper role when parts had mentioned that McGregor got injured. He played deeper. And by the way, he helped negotiate Celtic through that spell unbeaten. And he was playing really well in a deeper role. Not really his preferred professional position. And then during that period, Alan Moy came in and really established himself further at the park, which meant that when McGregor came back fit, he was the one that had to sit it out. And he's getting bits and pieces at the end of games and all that stuff. And he couldn't quite get ahead of steam up. So I can quite understand why he's not quite at the same level he was at. In the second half of last season, he was spectacular. And that form is going to be hard to maintain for a 21-year-old anyway.
Is he not like the kind of point in case that the calibre of player at Celtic at the moment? Now, O'Reilly could probably improve his scoring stats. And that's part of his repertoire. He has to get better at. Because Hatate brings you goals, Moyes will score you a goal, others there, McGregor will score you a goal.
Yeah. See the scoring start thing, it's a bit of red herring as well. The same with Hatate, he doesn't score that many goals. But the way the guys play is the reason why Jota's got 13, Abada's got 12, Kyogo's got 28. Because of the way these guys play and that side, they create the space and opportunities for others to go and score the goals. So I wouldn't be getting hung up on not scoring double figures. Because there's four or five guys who have got double figures because of those two.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that fact, and I think you're spot on. I think the function of the guys that you've mentioned to allow the guys to go and shine is clear. But O'Reilly, for me, will be getting no short of offers. So clubs down south would take him in a moment for a lot of money, but he can't get in the Celtic team on a regular basis. That shows you the kind of gulf and calibre from the haves and the have-nots, the rest, and I include Rangers amongst that.
And if you go through the team, really, Jota I thought was brilliant as well. But you mentioned Kyogo there, Mick. Obviously, 28 goals now for the season. I know there's no real answer to this, but it's like, how long is a piece of string? But we had a vote on Record Sport Online the other day about, is he the best striker since Henrik Larsson? And I know you won't forgive me for asking, throwing that your way, but Mick, we'll start with yourself. What do you think?
Listen, there's a good list, isn't there? I mean, you're looking at who are the best in 20 years. So, you're looking at Gary Hooper in there, scored a barload of goals, great finisher.
So I even included Robbie Keane, but I know he's only there 6 months. But Hooper, Dembele, Edward, Griffiths, McDonald, and then the sort of two loans, Keane and Bellamy, but even really.
Keane and Bellamy, longer term of their careers, it's not really a contest, really, if you think about it. But in terms of Celtic's permanent signings, Edward, top player. I think Dembele was probably the most complete out of all those guys. He had both feet, left foot, right foot, pace, good in the air. I think it's hard pushed in terms of ability to see past him. Hooper was a tremendous goal scorer, wasn't he? Scott McDonald was another one, great goal scorer, scored different kinds of goals. Griffiths, I know it didn't end very well for him. You look at his scoring numbers through the years. The season he scored 40, he was terrific. The season under Neil Lennon, when he came back after Christmas and helped them win the league, it was lethal. So he's in good company, but he's definitely up there, I think, Kyogo. I mean, his numbers now, was that 28 goals in, I don't know how many games he's had. I mean, I think it's basically one and two, isn't it? Mm-hmm. In terms of starts as well. He's been terrific. I mean, he's got three chances at the weekend, scored three goals. One of them was ruled off offside. Movement just tremendous, so quick. And even things like, when it's highlighted by some people who are much smarter than myself and Patsy, I'm sure, but the third goal against Rangers, if you look at it, that, it looks like a mistake from Souter, maybe Al McGregor's not quick enough off the line. Then you look at the pressing, Jota's pressing Souter, forcing the mistake. But you look across, Kyogo's belting out towards the touchline to shut off Tavernier so that McGregor can't pass the ball to him. So he can hoof it back to Celtic, beginning to get the ball on attack again. That kind of thing is unnoticed sometimes, but it's so key to this team. I mean, he runs all day, harassing the life out of defenders. And then when it comes to attacking, his movement is so special that he must be an absolute nightmare to play against. He's now scored about 5 goals in his last three Old Firm games. It does the same with a few other teams in this league as well. I mean, it's not just Rangers. I mean, Hearts are haunted by him as well. They just can't cope with him. And he's well underway to being a real top-class Celtic striker. He's there already, let's be honest. He's there already.
He's put 28 goals in 44 games, just looked up there. So, I mean, that's...
I was close.
That's incredible. But so, would you have Dembele just in front of him, Mick, in terms of since...
I think Dembele's a more complete player. Yeah. I think he's up there. I think he's up there with the likes of your Hooper, Griffiths, maybe Edouard. I think they're all kind of much. I think they're all on a similar kind of level. I think Dembele was a wee bit of a cut above. I think Dembele, plus the European aspect as well. I mean, Dembele did the business in the Champions League, didn't he, as well? Scored against sort of a cracker against Man City, didn't he? Gets a move to Lyon. All right, it's not. I think he's maybe with injuries through his career. It's not helped him either. But I think in terms of a complete striker. Yeah, I mean, I'm a complete nightmare again to play against. He's everything, the strength as well. He had that physical aspect that Kyogo might not have, as well as the speed, the movement, and the finishing. So, yeah, I think, well, there's not much in it. But it's a good, it's a pub debate, isn't it?
What would you think, Gordon? Would you have Kyogo at the top of your list?
Speaking of pub debates, here's our man talking here.
I think what's interesting is that you don't diminish what Griffiths did for the club.
Aye.
You're looking for, listen, like for likes, a difficult thing, as Mick says. Griffiths was a maverick, a craftsman, an opportunist, but he had a real, real flair. And some of the timings of his goals and the moments, critical moments that he intervened to score goals. Missa power, pace, strength. He could operate at a higher level Champions League because he's a more accomplished package, a more impressive package. A pedigree player. Griffiths wasn't a pedigree player. He was what he was. When you're talking movement, no, Larsson's movement was phenomenal. Kyogo's movement's on a different level from anything that had been before. I think he's ready to step into that kind of Larsson-esque kind of status.
I think as well, just on that, it's important to remember what Griffiths did, but see Scott McDonald as well. I don't think anyone would really...
He wouldn't know about pubs because he no longer goes out, right? No longer leaves the house.
This is unfortunately true. I wish it wasn't.
But McDonald's goals against Man United, AC Milan winner,
yeah,
big goals against Rangers, brilliant striker as well. Celtic have been really blessed since Larsson left, really.
Again, we're talking about pedigree levels, and Scott McDonald was a good fit for Celtic at that particular time because he was a penalty box sniffer.
Yeah.
Again, you're talking about pedigree. He's not in the level that we're talking about the guys previously. Sadly for Scott, even though he was a great servant.
I think he's up there as well. I think I'd put him on that same level as well. Scott McDonald. Listen, there's a lot of guys, I mean, Carson, in your heyday, if you played with this Celtic team, you'd fancy getting double figures for the season, surely.
I remember playing alongside...
Did you ever get double figures for the season, Carson?
Eddie, never get double figures for my entire
team. What about appearances?
No, nine. I once finished top scorer at Clyde when they played in the Championship. And guess what my tally was? Five.
Five?
But there were 5 gudgeons. I played alongside Eddie Annand at Clyde, who was a Rangers fanatic, as a Rangers nut. He used to sell programmes at Ibrox, an absolute fanatic. And he thought he could score 20 or 30 goals at Rangers, and he probably could have done. It's a fortunate place to be. If you're in the forward line of either of the Old Firm, you're scoring 20 plus, and if you're not, you fail.
I think that's pretty fair.
Bold. Take the point.
Unfortunately, the downside that comes with Kyogo being such an amazing talent, Mick, is that we're getting towards the summer. Inevitably, there's going to be rumours. I'm sure there's plenty of teams looking at him. But Do you think his performance on Saturday and the way he's been playing, does it push him price-wise into another echelon? I mean, I don't even know how Celtic would begin to value him at this point.
It is, but listen, a player's only worth what team's going to pay for him. And I think he might find that he falls into a kind of strange twilight zone that he might not be the most suitable for the English market, because he's probably at a level in the English market. I mean, your big six, top eight are buying guys at 80, 90 million pound strikers and all that stuff, and he's not there. So then you're looking down maybe towards the bottom, half of the Premier League, and these teams aren't looking for a little live wire striker who can make great movement and all that stuff. They want a bit of physical presence, and they play a different kind of way. So his market for that level is maybe, I think, slightly tricky for him in terms of if he wants to play that level. Continent, who knows, he could go anywhere. But no, I think Celtic, if anyone did pick up the phone, Celtic would be demanding top dough for him. I think he's got to do it in Europe next year as well. I think that's important to show that he can cut it at the Champions League level and score a few goals at that level, which is, again, fiendishly hard as well.
I think there's a large anomaly here. There's something behind this. He's not even a Japanese international.
Exactly. Bizarre.
Crazy.
Bizarrely. Nobody can seem to figure that one out, to be honest with you. I mean, we saw Japan at the World Cup and they were really good. What do you think they could have done with him? Actually, I mean, in terms of a cutting edge up front, you think, how's this guy not in the team? They have got a really good side, don't get me wrong. You think there'd be room for him. Obviously, Dyson Maeda's in that squad, who is a good, effective player as well. And he plays more centrally for his country. What do you think? I can understand perhaps why the way they play has kind of energised our bunny routine. It works at international level as well. But you know, you think Kyogo would get an odd at some point. He's 28 now as well. So it's a strange one, but I don't think Celtic should be too concerned about losing him anytime soon. But enjoy him while he lasts. That's the kind of message, isn't it?
Am I being far too naive, Gordon, to think that you know, if a Crystal Palace or a Southampton or someone right down at the bottom of the, or, you know, Bristol City or something come in for Kyogo, am I being far too naive to think, and sorry, and with Ange as well, to think that they would look at it and go, now look, I know there's more money, but we're at one of the biggest clubs in Europe, Champions League, winning trophies. Is that too naive?
Daniel, show me a Celtic player or a Celtic manager that hasn't jumped for the money. Show me a player that hasn't jumped for the money. Listen, it's noble of you to still believe that there is, that these people exist, that loyalty means more than extra thousands of pounds. They don't exist in football. Mm-hmm. It's a hard reality for fans to accept. I don't agree with Mike, actually. I think Kyogo does something that very few people do. Consistently puts the ball in the back of the net. I think he could do it in England and play.
Well, listen, the odds say that Sancho Palace and can barely get a game these days.
I think Kyogo's a better craftsman. I think he's got more strengths to his bow. And I think if he's got that movement and that perception to anticipate the way he has, it's a special thing and people pay a special amount of money to get that. And I think you'll be surprised. Ange, I've said it before, off like a shot. The big club comes in, off like a shot. Do you think Ange Postecoglou has not got agents working for him? I know the agency that he's with. I know the background. I know the ambition that he has. He would be the first person to reject the option, but he's not going to reject it because it's a natural law. You move to the bigger fish.
Yeah, but if that's the case, Parsley, then if you're Ange Postecoglou at this point in time, and there's been 13 jobs that come up in England, yeah. 13 this season, right, in Premier League England, and there's been a talk for about eight of them, probably at some point all 13, his name has been mentioned with them, and there may or may not have been interest level higher up, but it's not came to anything, and the question hasn't been firmly posed to Celtic from any of these 13 jobs. That would concern me, as if it was me, and I think, why is the phone not ringing more often for these kind of jobs? Because if you're not getting Brighton, Wolves, Southampton twice, Everton, Crystal Palace, Leeds, if you're not getting phone calls for these guys and pushed hard for these jobs, then you're not going to get Spurs, you're not going to get Chelsea.
So again, Mike, back to an argument that will hurt Daniel.
unfortunately, it's the football view, Scottish.
Oh, yeah. If you're a chief executive at Spurs, if you're a chief executive at Southampton, you're diminishing, you're rejecting the standard of Scottish football.
It's a misconception about the game up here. Unfortunately, listen, Neil Lennon won everything he could win up here. He beat Barcelona, they got to the last 16 in the Champions League.
Yeah,
tremendous achievement. Listen, Neil Lennon was a tremendous Celtic manager. In his first spell, did a great job. His second spell also done a great job. Had the one bad season, it all went a bit wrong. His second spell beats Lazio home and away to finish top of his group in the Europa League. Look at the jobs getting offered. Went to Bolton. Went to left Celtic after got beaten Barcelona. They went to Bolton. Brendan Rodgers is slightly different. Brendan Rodgers got a job at Leicester. I don't think in the back of what he did at Celtic. I think he got in the back of his previous track record in England.
Yeah.
Steven Gerrard gets a job at Aston Villa because he's Steven Gerrard, not because he achieved at Rangers. Unfortunately, whether we like it or not, the view in England up here isn't particularly high. And that is going to hamper Postecoglou or anyone else working in this environment, unfortunately.
Can I be controversial here? See his personality. It works against him as well. When he's working in boardrooms down south, he's not charismatic. He seems a wee bit dour and abrasive. He seems insular. He doesn't sell himself for promoting. Now, that works for Celtic fans because he's been successful.
I totally don't agree with that, Percy.
It's a show business world.
I don't think his nature is to be particularly showbiz, but he's a guy who Celtic fans hangs every word. Because he talks so much sense, he speaks really well. Barely a word is misplaced when he talks to us guys and us idiots in the press. His teams play attractive football. He's more pragmatic than people think. Make out. I think he's just kind of swashbuck on style. He's also a manager.
I agree with you, right? But again, you're falling into the trap that people from down south are polarising and magnifying his achievements and what he's like. He has to step out a wee bit. And is he that kind of guy? I suggest he's not. That's all I'm saying.
I totally disagree with you. I totally disagree with that aspect of things. I think he's proved he's a manager of substance, and with what he says and what he does and the way his team plays. And I think there's been certain jobs in England in particular he looks made for. I mean, Spurs couldn't, by the way. I think Spurs would do a fantastic job at Spurs, but it's not sexy enough for these teams because they're in the market for Conte, Mourinho.
Just defeated your argument.
You look at teams at the bottom league, Crystal Palace go back and get Roy Hodgson, who's 144 years old. Everton go and get Sean Dyche because they're in big bother, so they go and get Sean Dyche because that's what teams do. It used to be Sam Allardyce, now it's Sean Dyche.
What do they all have in common, Mick?
Hmm?
What did Sam Allardyce have in common? He promoted himself more than any other manager in the English game ever, right?
Well, they're billed as a safe pair of hands, whereas I think Postecoglou has maybe looked at as a risk because the CV says one trophy's in Australia, one trophy's in Japan, one trophy's in Scotland. And unfortunately, that's not France, Germany, Spain. So that's what's against them. The fact he's been successful with every job he's been in, including his national team as well, doesn't really matter because it's not in the big so-called big five leagues, Italy, France, Germany, Spain, because that's what they look for, these guys. They look for, and even down the leagues, they look for the German coach who got promoted with Hanover or something like that, some trendy guy. If that's the kind of the fashionable thing to do, get a German coach. Klopp did really well, get German coaches. Then a Spanish coach did well with some fourth division team in Spain, got to all the way through with the divisions, won't get loads of Spanish coaches. They follow the trends, and unfortunately, the trends never involve teams from Scotland.
Just to finish on that, I wouldn't for a second wish to speak on behalf of the whole Celtic support, but I think a lot of Celtic fans would accept him going to a Spurs, an Arsenal, a Man City, a Liverpool. I wish him well, they'd be excited for him, proud of him even. But I think if a Bournemouth came in or something and he left, I think that's disappointing.
And Brendan Rodgers, how the Celtic fans took to him departing the scene.
But even Leicester, Celtic to Leicester. No, I get the money, but I don't know.
Well, listen, Brendan Rodgers took Leicester and won the FA Cup and took all that stuff. Listen, he did a fantastic job at Leicester. Not a big club in Celtic, played a bigger league. At some point, Postecoglou might think it might be a team who are a little bit more kind of inventive, who are pushing towards the top of the Championship, might come in and ask the question. They might fancy that challenge to go and then take a team out of the Premier League. that may be his best option. But then again, I think he is content where he is. I think his rhetoric, especially since the cup final,
he's a
man who's the king of his castle.
Keep eating your sweeties for a minute, right? The judgment area for any Celtic manager is going to be Europe.
Yes.
He failed in Europe. Now, that is a black mark against them. Now, I know that you can talk about 45 minutes against Real Madrid or this or that. They failed. And again, if you're looking across the border and you already think that it's a Mickey Mouse operation and you don't really give any gravitas to the success that Celtic have achieved, clearly there's a case to be made that they're doing the right thing by diminishing, dismissing a quality Celtic team in a bad environment. Has to do something in Europe. Whether there's clamour for Ange to be put at the top of the list of some of these big, big clubs, it doesn't there for a reason.
I agree, partially, that's what he has to do, but I also, it's not fair, because if you look at the way the English game gone now, is Celtic's budget is probably on a par with one or two teams at the bottom of the Premier League and probably some of the ones at the top of the Championship. So if you take, look at Burnley this year, right? Burnley won the Championship, probably a budget similar to Celtic's, right? You parachute Burnley straight into the Champions League, would you expect them to win? No. You get gubbed. They'll get gubbed. They'd probably get gubbed six times. Right. We ask your... I mean, Rangers going to the Champions League...
You're missing a point here again, right?
Burnley and get
got, how much do Champions League clubs in England get automatically as part of the pyramid? The 8.6 million. How much do you get if you win the Scottish Premier League? The Premier League, what do you get? $3.2 million, right? The Celtic don't judge it. That's chicken feed in comparison to what they accrue from the exploits in Europe and what they get from the Champions League, right?
Southampton get £140 million from the domestic football. £140 million,
right?
If they're lucky, they bank about 30 odd million from Champions League. So you get 5 times the money for finishing bottom in the English Premier League, and you get
from Championship clubs.
Championship clubs, the Burnley budget is around about the same as Celtic's about this season. And if they get the Champions League now, they get hammered. And nobody expects them to get anything else but hammered. But as we set a bar for the Scottish teams,
Celtic are posting record revenues because of the Champions League.
They're the same revenues they posted 20 years ago. They're a £100 million turnover company. It's the same as they were in 2003. Whereas teams in England are turning over.
You can switch him off if you want.
I'm just telling you the bare facts, Patsy. That we expect more of our teams in Champions League than probably should, because it's a harder ask for them.
I'll let you both into a secret. This is why I roped you guys in this week to the Celtic pod, because these are my favourite two to do it with. But I think, look, we could talk about it forever. I should say, for everyone listening, you can find us at @dr_Celtic on Twitter, obviously at @record_sport on Twitter as well, and of course on Facebook and Instagram. Guys, as always, it's been a pleasure. God, Michael, thanks very much.
Good, Daniel. See you soon.
Oh, well, guys. Cheers in the pub.
Thanks for listening. Cheers.